Welcome, art souls, and welcome to the shed in the garden of our local pub. Very exciting. This is our chat with Zoe Rose, resident of Tallahassee, Florida. It's our first transatlantic interview and our first experiment in using Anchor's VoIP service. There are some mixed results, as they clearly have faster broadband in the US. We think it's possible, but do let us know what you think. Zoe Rose is studying for a Bachelor of Fine Arts. She's not even out of uni and she's writing stuff. So come on, guys, get moving with those works in progress. Get them out of the drawer, get them written. And she's talking about her as yet unperformed stage play, I'm Turning to My Verses. I started off by asking her what attracted her to the stage play format rather than a narrative text. What grabs you about that format as opposed to just the straight narrative text?
Well, I was a theater kid in high school, so that definitely did influence me. But it was when I started reading plays like that I would check out from like the theater teacher. And then we would also started reading Shakespeare like sophomore year that I started thinking of like how much I liked perform things. And I also do like slam poetry, so I kind of wanted to do something that's kind of at the cross section of poetry and drama. And then that's kind of where I started off with.
Interesting. You've done a lot of reading of plays.
Yes.
As opposed to watching of them?
I've seen plays. I've seen a lot of high school plays, so I haven't really seen like the good, not that it, you know, high school theater isn't necessarily good, but I haven't seen a lot of professional theater, mostly because its tickets can be pretty expensive. And then also like, there's not that much that comes that often in Orlando, but I have seen some productions. I've read a lot more.
If you'd been a New Yorker.
Yeah.
Your life would be different. Is it basically geographical like that?
Yeah, definitely. There's a great deal of that. If I lived in New York, I would probably be broke from constantly going to shows. So,
cool. Interesting then that living in a place where there isn't a lot of theatre arts going on, from what you're describing, that's the written art form you've chosen.
I guess it was the idea that like I've read a lot of books, I've read a lot of poetry, but it's something about like a performed piece that really speaks to me as like an art form, which, you know.
Okay, so tell us a bit about the play that we're discussing today called I'm Turning to My Verses.
Yes. Okay, so it's heavily influenced by, I read The Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test by Tom Wolfe. You know, yep. The late, great Tom Wolfe. And I was really interested in Ken Kesey's group and the Merry Pranksters and all of that. But basically, this is kind of a frame story because it opens in with a very ambitious but insecure college student who's not really sure what's going to happen after she graduates, interviewing this legend that nobody's been able to talk to for years because she is intimately connected with someone that knew him from like, you know, back in the times, and convinces him to do an interview regarding some like more personal things that he just wanted to talk about. And then it kind of opens into, you know, there's that's going on. And then it opens into the 1950s where he's like this young, recently discharged Korean War veteran that's just ran away to New York because he's lost, you know, and then he kind of falls in with this mad literary group run by this crazy guy, and his name's Bigger, which is kind of a little bit of an innuendo, who wants to, sorry?
I said I picked up on that. Some of the
name,
you've carefully coded. You've got Bigger, Sweetie, Passion, Johnny.
Yeah.
Shy.
Yeah, so he definitely is led into the group by this girl named Jean Bean who names him, because there's like a lot of, they hold a lot of importance with their names as connected to like their identities, you know, they change it as they feel fit, or somebody gives it to them to like kind of claim like almost a bit like of an ownership and a connection with them. That's like very like deep. But yeah, that's like, I felt like naming them kind of weird things, whereas some people weren't named super weird, was kind of a, like a choice to show, you know, their character and like how they're going to be progressing. So.
Okay. There's a lot to unpack actually, isn't
yeah.
there?
Yeah, definitely.
Given the way plays are written, perhaps more so than in a narrative text.
Yes. You,
the first thing you've written, and I've read this, and I have to say, I struggle to read plays because I always think they're there to be performed to me. That I'm sort of peeking behind the curtain in a way.
Yeah.
And in this one, I really am, because you've put in a fairly detailed dramatis personae at the beginning.
Yes.
And your first character, can I read it out?
Of course.
Eliza King, 18 to 22, female, young, ambitious, and perhaps just a little bit desperate. She's looking to break out as a writer in any way that she can. She represents the new and coming generation. Her being a woman is important in both the context of what her prospects would have been in Bill's time and in her own. Is there any Zoe Rose, perhaps, in Eliza King?
I didn't really think of it at the time when I was writing her. I mostly wanted to make the character female as like a choice of, you know, showing not so much women's progression, but like the differences of the new generation. But yeah, I definitely can see a little bit of myself in her that I kind of put in there, definitely, and with the ambition.
A little bit frustrated about how difficult it is to get these things shown.
Yes, definitely.
That's you, isn't it?
Yeah.
The new and coming generation. That's you, isn't it?
Yeah, quite a bit.
So go on then. So the next character there is Bill Sands. He's your main guy.
Yes.
Who, it shifts, doesn't it, from her story to his?
Yes. Yes, it does.
55 to 65 male. Is he anybody in the real world?
Well, he was a little bit inspired a little bit in part of Jack Kerouac towards like the end. I read an article that was published a little bit after his death. I don't know if the reporter had met him or somebody he knew met him, but it was talking about like what his last interactions with people were like, and that kind of inspired me. And then the last name Sands is kind of like saying, you know, without, because he's like Bill Sands everything. But he also is named for my great uncle passed away last year. He's nothing like Bill Sands, except that my great uncle did want to get back into writing because he had been writing when he was younger, but I kind of named him in part to honor his legacy.
I see. But in your description of Eliza King meeting somebody via someone else, that there isn't a Bill Sands that you've met.
No, unfortunately,
it's not in person.
Could you repeat that for me?
I said it's not at all autobiographical then.
No.
So take us through a little bit more about why these two periods, because she's not now, is she? She's set in the 90s, is that right?
Yes, before. Yeah.
So just before ubiquitous mobile telephony,
yeah,
etc. And his story is set around the early 50s, is that right?
Yes, exactly.
So why those two periods?
Well, the 50s I kind of chose because it was a turning point in a lot of society. There became some, you know, political unrest, social unrest that really presented itself in the 60s with like the civil rights movement and the hippies and the feminist movement and everything like that. And then in the 90s, as far as Eliza, she's also at a turning point before, like, as you said, like widespread use of like the internet and mobile phones and everything. So she's at a point where she doesn't realize what's going to be coming. Because I think that like with the advent of like widespread use of the internet, there's a lot more opportunities. I mean, obviously we're speaking now from like two different countries over the phone and the internet and everything. So it's like, as we got more connected, more opportunities would present for her than she would have ever thought at that point. And then it's kind of the same way for Bill, in the fact that like, he definitely would have found something he could have identified with, like just a little bit further in time had he not met these people on that night. So I kind of think that that's a way to connect them more as characters.
That's really interesting, because you've mentioned as well that we're talking across this mobile device from two different countries, but both of them, of course, countries that have enjoyed immense hegemony over the last 200 years and seem to be on the brink of some sort of major, potentially cataclysmic change. Are you drawing parallels with 20 years into Eliza's future?
A little bit, yeah. With like, would she be, you know, like a college student nowadays? I feel like she would have a little bit more, not so much comfort, but a little bit more confidence in her future. And the same thing with Bill, like had he been like, you know, like a couple years further, like into the 60s and then the 70s, like he would have had a bit more of like a, I can find something in this world for me. And they both kind of feel lost. Like they're kind of like those people that are a bit like stuck in the wrong generation. I hate to use that, but that kind of describes them most aptly.
So where did you start with this? What was the initial idea? Was it one of the characters or was it part of the story? Where do you start?
Man, I think I started kind of more towards the end, as far as like Jean Bean and Bill being like dramatically reunited in death. It was a super weird idea I got in the middle of Algebra 2 that I failed sophomore year. And then, so I got on my phone and I was just kind of like typing it down for myself to like look back at later. And then it became kind of a thing where, sorry, Dad, if he ever hears this, but like, I would kind of like just skip that. I knew I wasn't going to pass it anyway, but I would skip and go to the library and start typing like up completely unrelated scenes of like the acid trip and the poetry scenes. And I'm kind of trying to figure out like what, because I knew something had to configure together to make some sort of coherent narrative. And then that's kind of where I came up with the frame story. And then I realized, because I didn't want it to be so much of like Bill and Eliza at the beginning and then you don't hear back from them until the end. I wanted them to be a bit more connected with the, you know, the story being presented on stage. So then I kind of went back and then added more scenes with them. But yeah, it started with Jean Bean and Bill, because I'm kind of like a romantic that way, that I feel like it's always the romance that drives it.
For what it's worth, I don't know anyone that's ever passed algebra when they stopped to write a play scene in the middle of it.
Yeah.
So at least you know what it is you're after, and it certainly isn't maths.
No, definitely not.
So was it always going to be a play as opposed to a book?
Yeah, in my mind it definitely was something that I would imagine like people were on a stage presenting for others rather than somebody reading it. But I also wanted to write the play in such a way that it hopefully can be read. That's why I'm pretty direct with stage directions, character descriptions, everything like that, so that even if you're reading it, you can understand like exactly the dynamics going on.
And did you know things like how long it was going to be, one act, two act, if there'd be an interval, that sort of thing?
Actually, I was originally planning to do a two act, and then like within my theater troupe, there is like a competition within the district where there's multiple like acting competitions, makeup, costume, you know, things like that. But they had a playwriting competition. So I finished it and edited it as a one act for the playwriting competition. And then I placed second. And then nothing else happened with it. So then I expanded it a little bit more. So I kind of think it's more of like, I think we're at what, like 48 pages with it. So it's kind of a long one act. So I think that kind of satisfies.
It's around in the performance at 48 pages. Is that right?
I believe so. Man, I'm going to have to take a look here. Because sometimes I forget, like, when how much I add or take away. Because I've edited it, like, for 2 years now. So, okay, yeah, it's about 46. So, yeah, it's about a one act.
You've got to admit, it's inspiring stuff. Young, ambitious, eloquent, and driven. And I'm sure we're going to be seeing her name in lights soon. In the meantime, she has recorded the first scene of her play for you to listen to on artsoul.net, starring Brittany Porthouse, Greg Delgado, and the author. So pop on over to artsoul.net and have a listen. And when you've done that, you can also link to her YouTube channel. But not until you've heard the rest of this.
You've been editing it for 2 years. How long did it take you to, from start to finish, to actually write it down?
The first time, it only took me a couple of days because I was, like, after I got all the, like, random things down and I started forming connections with everything, I didn't really map it out so much as I just sat down and I was like, I'm just going to write this and whatever happens, happens. So then it was, like, you know, a couple days of that. And then it was just, like, continuous editing. Like, I would come home from school, and I've had a job since I think sophomore or junior year, so I would normally get like 1 or 2 hours before I had to go to work, and I would just, yeah, I wouldn't really do homework, so I would just sit down, edit, work on it, and then go to work, and then start the whole thing over the next day.
Just very quickly for any English or British listeners, sophomore is second year, is that right?
Yes, I believe so.
And junior is?
Third year, and then fourth year is like your last year in high school.
I see.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, you said what you want to major in is screenwriting. Was there ever a sense of this becoming a screenplay rather than a stage play?
I briefly thought about it because I did get a little bit of feedback that some of the moments seem like they're a little bit too nuanced for the stage. Like, I would either have to make, you know, certain actions bigger, or I would need to consider making it into a screenplay. And I just feel like for the way it's formatted, like with the poetry and the framing, it just doesn't seem like it would make sense, at least to me, of it being a screenplay. So it's always kind of been, in my mind, a play.
I see. So, to just going back, 2 days to write it, 2 years to edit it. Amongst the geeks of us doing this, can I just ask you a little bit about the nuts and bolts of your writing?
Of course.
How do you write? Can you just jot something down on the fly, or do you have a special table you sit at and you need to set aside time? How do you do it?
I have had a lot going on since, you know, I was like 16. So I've kind of just had to find the time. So whenever I get a spare moment, like, I would even have like time at school that I would be writing, or like in the middle of the night after work, or like right before. So like, I've never had like a set time to really do it other than when I was editing, but then, you know, schedules change. So my only consistent thing as far as like when I'm writing is I have to be listening to music or something, because otherwise I get really distracted. But yeah, otherwise I open up my laptop, like wherever I am, and just start working on it.
And what, when you open up your laptop, what piece of software are you working on?
It used to be Google Docs, because sometimes I would use the computer at school, but now I just use Microsoft Word, whatever the current version is. I'm not sure. But yeah, now I use Word.
So 2 years is a reasonably long time to be working on a piece.
And yeah.
Especially from 16 to 18.
Yes.
How does young adult you look back at the words and thought processes of teenage you that started it?
Well, I've kept, like, every single time I decide to edit it again or rewrite certain parts, I'll save the old file and, like, rename it or something. And I'll look back and I can definitely see where I am still 16 or where I am still in high school. But as far as it is, and sometimes I kind of cringe because I'm like, oh, God, why did I think that was good or anything? Because I was always trying to find people that could give me feedback on it. And I get embarrassed because I'm like, oh, they read that. But otherwise, it's kind of like I can see, like, how this has, like, been a part of my life as it's kind of been going along. So I can kind of see how it's evolved over time the same way, like, I've been, like, you know, doing some maturing and evolving myself. So it's kind of weird, like, in a sense, because it's, like, a part of you is your writing. So...
So that's interesting. In terms of evolving it alongside yourself, is it the actual story that's changed, or mainly the way you're telling the story?
Some parts of the story have changed, and then definitely the way that I've been formatting the story mostly has changed. It wasn't initially a frame story. Initially, I thought the whole Eliza and Bill thing was weird. So I just cut it out. But then I kind of integrated it back into the story. But I don't know. When I was younger, I definitely was like, yeah, everybody dies. This is good. The sadder it is, the better. So initially it was just he dies all alone. But then I kind of edited it back in. And especially after my great uncle passed away, I kind of had a different idea about death because... like, I don't want my own personal belief to be like, oh, it's just like you die alone, because that's how teenagers are. They're absolutely insufferable. I'm still a teenager. I still think that. But I definitely edited it so there's more of a hopeful ending, you know, in the idea of like you don't really die alone and sad and as like a drunk, but you
can die. Is it going soft in your old age?
A little bit. I mean, I'm about to be 19, so maybe I'll become one of those people that like to watch Hallmark movies and stuff. So I wouldn't put it past myself.
I mean, it must be hard when you've created a character to kill him anyway. Presumably it got that much harder after your own personal experience of the matter.
No, I've always been kind of a weirdo that likes to kill off characters. I've definitely learned to scale back on that. Like, not everybody needs to die. You don't need to be George R. R. Martin to, like, have a good story. But, yeah, definitely with my own experiences, I've gotten a bit more, I don't want to say sensitive, but I've definitely become more, like, cognizant of, like, the actual emotional weight of death and how people deal with it. And, like, it used to be that I just wanted it to seem like people suffer to like a stupid extent and call that art. But now I kind of understand that, like, you know, for some people to see that it's like there's more to death than just like the biological process and like the momentary excitement of like, oh, that character's dead. Like there's got to be something attached to it, I feel like.
Well, yeah, someone told me that death is what other people experience. Person, because they're kind of out of it by the end.
Yeah.
So I suppose I can see where you're coming from. So do you still, this is a hard one, but with a lot of people that we've spoken to, they've dusted off manuscripts from the drawer and reread it. And I'm able to say to them, now that you've reread it, do you still like it? You've been living with it for 2 years. Do you still like it as a story, or is it just something you've put so much effort into now, you've just got to get it right?
That is difficult. I kind of feel the way about, like, it was kind of my high school sweetheart, like, this play was, because I've been published in, like, a little things, like, this year, so, and I've definitely seen that I've evolved and I've grown as a writer past this play, and I've half written like three other plays since, but it's kind of like my high school sweetheart in that, you know, this is something I spent a lot of time with, and it was like my first completed piece of writing that I really felt something about, and it crushed me when I got rejections for like publications and things like that. And normally, I mean, I've gotten like maybe like 50, 60 rejections. I don't know. I don't really keep track, but, and it's nothing to me, but whenever I hear back about this and it's a no, it hurts for like 2 days, and nothing ever really phases me like that. So it's just kind of like, I feel like I'm definitely like, I'm okay with letting it go. I just need some more time before I do. 'Cause I feel like at this point it's like, it's complete. But I need to like,
that's interesting. Where are you getting rejections from? I mean, I think we all know when you write a novel, where all these rejections come from. What do you do with a play?
So what I do is basically I looked online for small, like, I'm not gonna run to Samuel French or Dramatist Publishing, I believe. Like, those are the big known play publications. So I'm not running to them because I know that I don't even think you can query them unless you have an agent, and I don't have an agent. So I was looking online for like more, the smaller independent play publishings, and the ones that like could fit me and that I found applicable were ones that, you know, they said no. But like then the other ones, it's also difficult because this is definitely, there's some adult subject matter in here, like, that you just can't get around. And there's actually surprisingly a lot of smaller play publishing companies or groups, whatever you call them, that only do things that are like completely family friendly and things like that. So the ones that I were able to find, I was like, okay, this is going to be it. And I email them, and then I hear back, and then I send it, and then I wait and wait. And then I finally hear back like so long that I'm like, wait, what was this even from? And then I'm like, ah. So then I get disappointed. But
so you're going directly to play publishers to publish it as a script, yes, rather than theater companies to perform it.
Yeah, I guess that is a different route that I could go with. It just feels like, because see, it's almost like I'm too scared to directly contact theater companies about it, because like that kind of no is so much more personal, you know, than like to be published, because that's not even directly leading to my end result, which would be to see this get performed.
Well, true, but that's it. If it's to flourish, that's it. Where it needs to flourish, isn't it? Is live,
yes,
on stage.
I definitely need to.
And you can do that without a publishing company.
I suppose you can, yeah. That didn't really occur to me.
I mean, has it even occurred to you to just try and find a company to act it with, see if you can raise the money to hire the theatre, and see if you can make a go of it?
I guess you are right. I could definitely try that. It's a little bit difficult because like money is not really an issue for me, but I am a college student and I do work because tuition is super expensive. But that would, yeah.
Presumably, actors then, cheap, free actors are in plentiful supply.
God, yes. I know so many of them. That definitely could be an option.
So, you've recorded the first,
yes,
first scene in an audio format that we're going to put on the website if you're,
yes,
happy
of course,
with that. That's Brittany Porthouse,
yes,
as Eliza, and Greg Delgado,
yes,
as Phil. And you?
Oh, I read the stage directions. It's not really that.
You didn't want to pry out your acting muscle on this occasion.
No, I am definitely not an actor.
Well, has actually performing it in some way, or albeit just for spoken word, has that opened your eyes to any maybe issues with it, or things you really like about it, or any drive to actually get it?
Yes, actually, when I was in high school, I was like in a theater troupe, but I quit for some reason. So then I kind of put it away for like a little while, and then I went back to editing it. But while I was in the theater troupe, I did do a lot of readings with actors, and to have like to access actors like that and get feedback was so invaluable. That was like my main editing process for like a year, was just reading it out loud, and then I could hear like what works and what doesn't. And this might sound a little bit crazy, but like even when I was like, if I was home and nobody was else was there, I would read it myself, you know, and kind of like do the characters, which sounds crazy, but just to kind of get a sense of like what's working and what's not, especially with the poetry, because poetry in plays is pretty hard to like incorporate. But yeah, that, and then it definitely was like my big passion with it would be to see it performed live, and then I feel like I could be like, okay, I'm good, like I can put this aside. But yeah, definitely the reading.
Well, and then that, we'll be very proud if we've been the impetus to that. So what's next for Zoe Rose? Are we going to see some of these half-finished three plays finished?
That's a good question. I've been working on one a little bit. It's kind of a smaller cast, and it doesn't require a lot of sets. So I've kind of been thinking, if I were to ever, you know, like, fuck up the funds to, like, do my own play and everything, it would be that one, just because it'd be a lot cheaper. But I'm also, I have a YouTube channel. I've been doing some like spoken word stuff and some like weird short films. And that's been like my main thing I've been doing lately. But other than that.
You want to plug the address of your YouTube channel?
I will email that to you.
And we'll put that on the website as well as the link.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Anyway, thank you so much for talking to us. That's been fascinating.
Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.